babu babu baba babu babu babam babu babu babam.
Well, you gotta wait till it kicks in. Kevin got nervous we weren't starting.
No reason to get nervous, Kevin.
We're here. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're on the stream, and we are joined by a wonderful man by the name of Rick Kogan. Perhaps you'll recognize his voice.
Hello, it's not late. My voice is deeper later. Sunday nights is deeper later, but it's always a thrill. I really like and admire you two. So
back at you. And whenever I hear your voice, I have to look up to see if
start
it's you
screaming
or if B. Arthur has come back.
B. Arthur,
yes.
And you're expecting B. Arthur to come back. That's
I hope at some point.
That's an interesting fantasy, Bill.
Start that wearing a neck scarf.
That is an interesting fantasy.
He's Bill Leff. What do you
I
want?
Can't explain yes, I it. Know. It's just a
no.
Fantasy.
I'm sure you can.
No,
it.
I can't.
We love you. We respect you. We understand you're going to be at the Printers Row Lit Fest this weekend, and we wanted to have you on to talk about your appearance there.
Oh, it's not just me. I mean, I think the Lit Fest is, you know, when you keep hearing these pronunciations of, oh, the book is dead. The book is dead. Well, go down to Printers Row Lit Fest. These people are not reading books on iPads and other gizmos on Kindles and Nooks and whatever else. They're buying books.
Sure.
And that's one of the great joys of that whole event. It also shows people who've never been there what an interesting neighborhood Printers Row is.
Yeah. I mean,
there aren't printers there anymore, but it's a fascinating, lovely South Loop neighborhood.
So let's talk about what you just said for a second there.
Yes.
The perception that the book is dead. It's obviously not dead. Will there be a time, though, that happens? I'm hoping not.
I can't imagine. I literally can't imagine. There may be, and I'm thinking, I got a 12-year-old named Fiona.
Mm-hmm.
She loves nothing. She is as computer literate as anybody I know, mm-hmm. much more so than any adult I know, and she knows how to do all sorts of things on the computer, but she likes nothing more than sitting down with a real book.
There's nothing better.
And I think that kids today are not being force-fed books on gizmos,
right?
But rather in real hardcover.
The classic platform.
Yes.
I can't read a book on like a Kindle or on my iPad. It's just
I can do it, and I do it if I'm going, you know, away for like 2 weeks. I'll load up three books
or
four books because I don't want to carry.
Right.
Yeah, but to touch the pages, hold it in your hand, the smell of a book.
It's like being a drug addict. You know, I get my fix. I get a full enough fix with pages here.
Sure.
So that when I go away, it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it is okay. I think that most people can have a lovely balance of it. I mean, I think you shouldn't say, oh, I will never read a real book again, or I'll never read a book online again. There's an interesting balance, I think,
yeah.
that one can get these
days. I can't
days.
Do it on my iPad because I feel like I could be doing other things,
you know,
like cruising around.
You know, it's really impossible for me to read on an iPad
what?
Or any machine as a newspaper.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That I simply can't do. That, you know, there.
It's
I think there
blood.
Will always be books. I can't be so assured that there will always
yeah,
be
isn't
newspapers.
That sad?
Yeah.
A couple
yes,
years
because
ago.
Because it's my job.
Right. right? It's extra sad.
Sadder than sad.
More
Bill.
Than sad.
Sadder than sad.
Tragic almost.
Yes.
A friend is visiting, and he has never seen my house before, and we're giving him a tour of the house. And in one room, in our family room, we have an entire wall that is books from top to bottom.
Yeah.
There's probably 400 books. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at it, and he goes, you know what's sad is this could probably be the last generation where this sort of thing is part of a house. When I was a kid, I could tell you a dozen people who had a book room or a bookshelf or a book.
Many bookshelves.
Yeah, yeah. Many. But
yeah.
Now it's just not good.
That is probably true, but it reminds me of a story. Roger Simon, who was a columnist here for many years and still
so
writes
good.
Once a month in the Sun Times, when he went to college at the University of Illinois, he went down there. He didn't know his roommate yet, so he comes in, and he, of course, as anybody would have 40-some years ago, he'd put his books up on a shelf,
mm-hmm.
and got his room all together, and the guy walked in, and the guy was some kind of athlete, like a football player or something. It doesn't matter, really. And they introduce themselves, and he looks at this wall of books, and he goes, it's a lot of books.
Mm-hmm.
Roger goes, yeah. He goes, have you read all these books? And Roger goes, yeah. And the guy says, what do you still got them for?
Yeah, right.
They're trophies.
They're talismans. They remind you, simply looking at a title will remind you of something, remind you of a time
yeah.
you read it.
Now, one of my best friends, when he's done with a book, he'll say, hey, I just read a book. Here, take it. He'll hand it to me. He'll give it to me to keep.
I do that. I do that a lot.
Which is, it's so admirable. But like we were just saying, there's something about having that body of work and look up and go, I've read all of these.
Yeah.
I know all these
yeah.
books.
And it's not an ego thing.
No.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
it's
no.
not like, hey, I've read The Great Gatsby.
Right.
Because I think in everybody's mind, the reason you keep books for a lot of people is you do think to yourself sometimes, I'm going to reread that book.
Yeah, right.
I loved that book when I was 11, when I was 21, when I was 31. I'm going to go reread On the Road
yeah.
and see if it does the same thing to me. Or you're going to look something up.
Yeah.
It tells you, it's like a living kind of diary. You know what I mean?
Although I'm in this quandary now because we have refinished our basement and we moved some bookshelves down there. I have a rock and roll encyclopedia that I used every single night when I was on the air at the
sure.
Loop radio station
sure.
in 1986. I can get all that information online. It's probably
easily.
Updated.
Easily.
I can't get rid of it. I have to purge myself of some of these books.
But doesn't it evoke the memories of looking stuff
yes.
up?
But I mean, so what do I do? Put it in the attic?
I still have a dictionary
mm-hmm.
that I occasionally will consult.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is a lot easier to find 800 definitions and it's all laid out on the internet or on your screen. But there's still something so wonderful about looking it up because in a book, I think, unlike the internet, you don't know what else you might find.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
You might hit the wrong page and say, well, I really don't know what an aardvark is.
Right.
You know,
right.
I studied this. Really? An aardvark is this?
Yeah.
And that's the same thing back to Printer's Row that I think is the joy of that, or the joy. One of the reasons people think there aren't a lot of books out there anymore is because there are not a lot of bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
And bookstores have taken a huge, huge crunch. There used to be three of them right here on Michigan Avenue, Crocs and Stuart Brand. The thing about a bookstore or Printer's Row is to go in, you're not going in to get a size 8 shoe.
Mm-hmm.
You were just going in, and there is that incredible element of surprise. You could be grabbed by a title.
Mm-hmm.
You could be grabbed by a cover. You could be grabbed by the name of an author.
Mm-hmm.
You can be grabbed just by the look of the book. And there are just so many stands at Printer's Row. That's what, there may be some people who go there to get specific books, but I think the majority of people who go to Printer's Row Litfest are not searching for anything specific.
They're browsing.
They want to be surprised.
Right, sure. Can you judge a book by its cover?
Can I?
Yeah.
No.
I can.
Yeah.
Can you really?
I really
yeah.
can.
Wow.
I just, if it captures my eye, if it's something I want to read, I don't care what the cover looks like, but just the browsing and looking around,
yeah.
if that cover doesn't grab me, I'm not even going to read it.
That's interesting. I think that's true of a lot of people. But I don't know if you can judge the book by its cover.
Right.
I think you can be compelled to pick it up
yeah.
and maybe
yeah.
even to buy it
yeah.
by its cover. But then all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, this isn't the book. Why do they have a monster on this cover? This
right.
is this is about teenage girls. You know what I mean?
They are monsters.
You know what is a nice surprise when there's an author that you like and you go to a bookstore? The other day I was in Barnes & Noble in Evanston and I love David Sedaris and I didn't know he had a new book out.
Yeah.
And there's a big
it's his diary or something.
Right.
It's his diary.
I yeah. didn't know it existed. So there's just an excitement where you go, good, I'm glad it's working.
The other thing, there used to be book sections in newspapers.
Right.
I mean, the Tribune
oh, yeah.
used to have a full one. My father used to edit the book section at the Sun-Times.
Mm.
Every paper. Now it's, I think, the New York Times. I know the New York Times has one. I think the LA Times has one, but I'll bet there is not another freestanding book section in American newspapers. So and there's certainly no book shows on TV or even radio.
Right.
I mean, Bob Crummy used to have a half hour show.
Crummy Circle.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
With authors.
Yeah.
So you don't even get exposed to authors. I suppose you could, there must be a million author sites
mm-hmm.
on the internet, but that also is not the same.
Right.
It doesn't give you that element of surprise, and it doesn't give you the book news you're
yeah.
after.
Right.
You know?
People Magazine, unless they've changed this very recently, but they would put in most issues of People Magazine three or four books that they would recommend.
Sure. Entertainment Weekly still does
yeah,
that,
they do
too.
It too, yeah.
And Enough do. The New Yorker still reviews books, and their magazines and And newspapers, the Tribune will run a couple reviews a week somewhere, but it's just not the same.
And Oprah's book club was good for business, wasn't it?
Sure it was. It was
sold
good for
a lot of
certain,
books.
It was good for certain authors.
Yeah.
But it inspired young girls today to start their own book club and a lot of housewives that do that too.
But the other thing that I think was good for the younger generations was Harry Potter.
I never read one page of that or seen a movie.
Millions of kids at various ages, and they grew up with these Harry Potter books. And the last few were 700 pages thick.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing intimidating about it to them. And so I think now those kids are looking for, because they were weaned on it. This was their experience of devouring books, which I think is just great.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. And at Printers Row, too, you get to meet, I mean, believe me, not all authors are nice people or interesting people.
I didn't know that.
Not many of them, frankly. But you get to meet the authors there, too. It's a sort of intimate setting. And when you have the two big celebrity authors at Printers Row, like, there's no Ernest Hemingway wandering around there. It's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I know, which
and
is
Al
what?
Franken.
Yeah.
They are both incredibly smart people, and I admire them both. But when I think of American literature in the year 2017, the name Kareem Abdul-Jabbar does not immediately rush to mind.
It's good, though, that they're there and shows that there's a variety of people that read books.
Also, if you have these celebrity authors, they will draw people to the event, and you can't help yourself. And nobody I know is going simply to see Kareem Abdul-Jabbar talk to Richard Roper on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
They may go to just hear it, but then they will walk around. They'll be compelled to walk around and to look at this intense schedule. And the schedule, too, is something. You know, Stacey Keach was supposed to be there.
But he's gotten sick.
Chris Jones, who sits next to me, the theater critic, just talked to him on the phone. Just talked to Stacey Keach on the phone. And he feels good.
He does.
He feels good.
Good.
And he described, he didn't know what was going on stage. He had a heart attack.
Oh, no.
On the opening night of Pamplona, which is a play about the aforementioned Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah.
Boy, timing is everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can go to printersrowlitfest.org for the whole schedule. When are you going to be there? What days?
Oh, man, what have I got? There was one year when I had seven different things to
do. Seven panel-type things
and
or interviews?
I said to the people in charge of this, I said, can't you find someone else at the Tribune who knows how to read? Why am I doing seven of these? This year I'm doing Neil Steinberg and Mike Lenihan on Saturday talking, and a woman named Carrie Lynn talking about writing nonfiction. Then on Sunday, the later one is Irvin Welsh, the train spotting author.
Oh, nice.
Because he has collaborated on a play called Creatives with a lovely writer named Don DeGrazi who teaches at Columbia. And Irvin's a character and a half, and he's lived here for the last, like, 10 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Trainspotting 2 is just, he loves Chicago. Right. He fell in love with Chicago. And then I'm doing, earlier that day, Mike Rico's son, David, and a guy named Joby Cerny,
mm-hmm.
who have collaborated on an audio book. It's in print, too, but an audio book of the love letters of Mike Royko.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to him about that when the book was coming out.
When you think Mike Royko, you don't automatically think love letters either.
Immediately.
You know? Yeah. And it's Joby is a fascinating guy. You know who he is,
yes,
right?
I do.
He's the voice of?
Of Poppin' Fresh.
The Pillsbury Doughboy.
Yeah.
Really? The first time I ever heard him on the radio, naive as I am, I go, Joby, you've made a career out of your voiceover work, and you're the Pillsbury Doughboy. Can you give us some Pillsbury Doughboy? No.
Not allowed to.
Contractually forbidden.
He's not even allowed to say that he's the voice.
I know.
I can, but he cannot.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Isn't that
interesting? That's weird.
It is weird.
It's a confidentiality agreement.
Well, Pillsbury is very proprietary, as I learned this week, last Sunday's story about the redone cover girls of Playboy.
Yeah.
oh my God, dealing with, and I understand why they're so proprietary. It took my arm twisting of Cooper Hefner, who you guys interviewed.
Yeah.
And didn't we find him? I was sitting on the side. Didn't you find him the nicest kid?
Loved him.
Totally loved him.
Yeah. And he is really smart, nice, looks a little like Hef.
Yeah, a lot.
Sounds
a lot like Hef.
Yeah.
And although Hef's now 91, I don't know what he sounds like, but he's resurrecting. He's really trying to resurrect that famous
right
brand.
Yeah,
but you want to try to use that Playboy Bunny logo anywhere?
Not easy.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck.
I was going to get that on a tattoo.
They're very protective.
Well, just don't put it on the internet. Or they'd come, or someone from Playboy will come and cut it out of your skin.
Yeah. Not to scare you.
Yeah, please. I'm sure there are a number of Playboy Bunny logos on a number of bodies wandering around.
Yeah.
But they may not go to those lengths to stop the use of that logo.
Yeah.
Well, we wanted to have you up to promote your appearances at the Printers Row Lit Fest.
I don't care about my appearances. Go to Printers Row. It's fun. There are a lot of saloons down there, and there are a lot of books down there. It's not about seeing me. Just go to the... whatever website Wendy just told
you to go to. It's printersrowlitfest.org.
Okay, and you'll be able to find something you'll like, and you'll undoubtedly find it. One of the many, many tents they have there. You'll find a book to take home
without a doubt.
Eventually put on your bookshelf.
Yep, so true. Rick, thanks so much.
I love
Always
you guys.
Fun to
you
talk
got,
to you.
Thank you so much.
That's Rick Hogan, everybody. We'll take a quick break. We'll get some news in, and then there's more show. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. By the way, Judy, and this is not to take away for the respect, love, and admiration that Wendy and I have for you. But we like the new guy in the newsroom.
Doma T. Pongo?
Yeah, we like Doma T. Pongo.
I call him Bill.
You just call him Bill?
Bill just calls him Pongo.
Yeah.
I am calling him Pongo,
He's
too.
He's good.
Because I want to say Domate, Domitrius.
That's
Dome get in my way. And
no,
I'm
none
like,
of those are right.
I know, he's great. I trained him, so he'll be
very good. Yep.
He's okay. I mean, let's not go overboard.
She will not let anyone else take a compliment in the newsroom. You realize that, correct?
I guess so.
Now, I mean, when you're talking about the best, all right, let's get that out of the way.
Now, most of the stories he did were centered around Ghana for some reason.
Yeah.
His family's from Ghana, because almost every story he reported on was based in Ghana.
Pretty soon it'll just be all about him.
Whatever.
Is Judy Pylak's confidence class all filled up? Because I'd like to enroll in it.
It's the door is always open.
Always room for one more.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yep. Yeah.
That's how it should be.
I can never fill myself, so... No, I've always... I give and give and give.
Until there's nothing
endless.
Left to give.
It's just endless,
right.
Wendy.
That's it.
Yeah, no, you know what? Doma T.
Yes, that's it. Doma T. Pongo.
Bill is a great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. He's really...
Don't call him Bill. That's not his name. That's like him calling you Jane.
I rename everyone.
You do?
I called him, though, when he did his first newscast on the weekend when he was alone for the first time. And I was like, Bill. And he goes, I'm sorry. You've got the wrong. I go, no, I've got the right guy. All right. You call that a newscast?
Wow.
Good. Start him out ready. That's perfect.
I'm so glad I'm not in the newsroom. I would have been fired day
dangerous
two.
In there. So dangerous in there. Wendy, I will need your help with this. And here's why. I found this over at MSN. Apparently, from what they tell us over at MSN, people in the South speak differently from people in the rest of the country.
My
now,
mother-in-law.
I was just going to say, you have firsthand knowledge of this, don't you?
Is from Corinth, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I would say Corinth, but Corinth, Mississippi.
That's probably as southern as you can get.
Mm-hmm. And she says, Wendy. That's how she says my name. And it's funny because you'd think you'd lose your accent after being here all these years. Jimmy Mack feels his mom's accent has gotten thicker. But it's her heritage.
Yeah, right.
If she all of a sudden lost it, I wouldn't understand her anymore.
But they tend to, from my dealings with people in the South, they tend to take a word or phrase that we would say in a half a second or three quarters of a second and spread it out so it could last minutes or even an hour or so if they wanted to.
I do apologize because a lot of times when she is telling me a story, I find myself jumping in, like filling in the blanks, and I'm not usually right. So then it's like, I got to just shut up and let her finish her story.
Yeah.
And I love
it. Even
her,
if it takes 2 hours.
That's all right.
Yeah. Apparently, they have a lot of time in the South.
Are they never in a hurry?
Never. Never in a hurry.
There's something nice about that.
I know. I kind of wish we would be more like that and not in a hurry.
There's got to be a good middle ground.
Yep. Right. right? I agree with you.
So you have some of the words that we say differently?
These are things that are said differently in the South from the rest of us in the United States.
The Yankees?
The Yankees or any of the American League Baseball clubs, Wendy, not just the Yankees.
they only hadn't, destroyed so many buildings.
Yeah, there's that. Well, all right, so... you and I have discussed this a couple of times with Steve Bertrand, and that is, in the South, if you're saying something bad about somebody, and you can say something horrible about somebody, if you include one little phrase, you get yourself off the hook. Do you know what that phrase is?
I can't remember that one. I know God forbid is one of them.
Well, God forbid is one that happens, that's more of an East Coast thing.
Oh, I know what it is.
Do you know what it is?
Bless his soul.
Bless his heart.
Bless his heart. That's right. That is so 100%.
Now, that Kevin Richter is the worst producer I've ever had. Bless his heart. He tries his hardest.
I think you say it first. I think you go, Kevin Richter, bless his little muscular heart.
Yeah.
He is not good.
He's ineffective.
You guys are so sweet.
See what I mean?
But it does soften it up a little bit, and it shows that you're merely stating a fact, but you do like him.
Yes. You can say the worst that Judy Pilak, bless her heart, is a cannibal. I have seen her eat people. Just go up to a stranger and take a gnaw right off his arm. Bless her heart, though. She's hungry.
A gnaw?
Yeah, gnaw right off her arm. there's something magical if you just throw that phrase in, bless her heart,
who
bless
his heart.
Who are
we talking about when Bertrand jumped in with that? I cannot for the life of me remember.
I'm not sure.
But it was a bless his heart.
Somebody
in sports.
In most of the country, Wendy, your pants are probably referred to as pants, but not in the South. What are they called in the South?
Breeches.
Breeches. Absolutely right.
Still?
Yeah. Still.
I was going with trousers, but breeches.
Don't get your breeches in a bunch.
Right. What does that mean?
I don't know.
I don't know what that means.
Like, don't get your panties
I've
in a bunch.
Heard it. Yeah, but does that mean don't let them clog up so you can't move? What does that mean?
Well, that would be literally, but no, what the saying is.
It means don't be bothered by it. Yeah, there's no reason to be bothered by it.
Calm down.
Many people around the country know this phrase, britches, but very few use it, with the exception of Southerners. Britches, it says here, are pants. The common uses of the term include the saying, he is too big for his britches, meaning he's too cocky. Or the variation, you can get glad in the same britches you get mad in.
I've never heard that before.
I've never heard that before. What does that mean exactly?
We're Northerners, though, so.
It means you'll have to learn to live with it. You can get glad in the same britches you get mad in.
Or what's our saying? We all wear the same. We all put our pants on.
One leg at a time.
One leg at a time.
Yep.
My mom, for that particular thing, would always say, like it or lump it.
Yeah.
She said that to me.
Everybody's
all
mom
the
says
time.
That.
What does that even mean?
That is such a.
Like it or I'll punch you?
What? I said that when I was like 10 in the schoolyard.
Like it or lump it.
Oh my gosh, so I can't believe your mom said that.
Wait, all of our moms did.
Everybody's mom said that.
Like it or lump it. I still don't really know what that means.
Here's what it means. Like, today's generation, if there's something they don't agree with, you get one word, and that word is whatever. And that is all encompassing.
Whatever.
But back then, they were a little more flowery with the language. Like it or lump it.
I'm making pork chops for dinner. Oh, I didn't want... Like it or lump it? What does lump it mean?
I choose to lump it, thank you very much. I will err on the side of lumping it. I don't want your pork chops. all right, so it also says here that for most of the country, you push your baby around in a baby carriage. But in the South, that would be a buggy that you put your child in. But that also applies, it says here in the South, to shopping carts. That if you're in a grocery store...
Where did I put my buggy?
Right.
My purse is in it.
Right. My like it or lump it bag. It's in the buggy.
All right. Buggy me.
So, because I've heard buggy referred to here with a kid's stroller, a buggy here, but not.
But there's a difference. A buggy is where there's a top on it and a baby can be laid
flat. Yeah, from like the 1940s.
Right.
And then there's a stroller where the kid's sitting upright. It's a little different.
Right.
They still make rubber baby buggy bunkers.
Yeah, there's
rubber baby.
I think we'd call them all strollers, though. You never say buggy, right? You say stroller for everything.
Stroller mostly.
Yeah, but if I had a buggy, I would call it a buggy.
Right, right.
It's more like a covered wagon. You know, they still sell them. You know, you can get them at an antique store.
Aren't they called like prams?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's even older, I think, and more. Yeah. certainly more British.
Like it or lump it.
Like it or lump it, my British friends.
I will. Everybody's going to say that now today.
Yeah, it
Let's
should be said.
Let's bring that back. Say that forever.
Yeah, it should be said more often. Here in the Midwest, if you're ordering something to drink with your meal, you would order a pop. In New England, they would say a tonic. But in the South, what is the word?
Soda?
Nope.
A Coke.
But a Coke there doesn't mean, like, a Coke here means a Coke. But in the South, it can mean an orange or a root beer or a Sprite. I'll have a lemon lime Coke.
We kind of did that in our house, too.
Did you?
Yeah, because actually we drank Tab. That's what my sister would always drink.
But okay, like, but in the cola family, I mean, you wouldn't put, like, lemonade in there.
But in the South, it's not uncommon to say, if you wanted an orange soda, orange Fanta, I'll take an orange Coke.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of did that.
Yeah.
I have a friend who would say, get me something to drink for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just beverage, bevy.
Right.
And I have never said pop in all of my life.
We always said pop, and now I say soda pop because in Chicago it's so divided. Some people say soda, some say pop. So
I'm from Brookfield.
In Chicago, it's only soda.
See?
But I moved to the suburbs, and now I say pop.
I hate myself
for it.
I
want to say soda again, but I forget.
Yeah.
It's like I want to say icebox, and I keep saying refrigerator.
No. But that's not regional. That's dated.
Yes.
Like everybody's grandparents.
Because you used to put a big hunk of ice in a box, and that was how you refrigerated
But
things.
I think we said it in Chicago for way longer than everyone else said it.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my parents said icebox.
Because our grandparents had the icebox, and they kept saying, it's on the icebox. Go get the minced ham out of the icebox.
Right.
You don't like minced ham? Like it or
like
lump it.
You get minced ham. Now, you know what my grandmother would call, like, sometimes she would say icebox, but more times than anything, she would refer to a refrigerator as a frigidaire. It's in the frigidaire. Get it in the frigidaire.
And you not necessarily had that brand. It's just that's
no,
what
that
she
is
referred
a,
to.
Right.
Yes.
That's a brand name that she, you know how most people, instead of
Kleenex.
Tissue, they say Kleenex.
Kleenex. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. In the South, a crayfish, as we would say,
crawfish.
Is a crawdad.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
A crawdad.
But we don't say crayfish. We say crawfish. I know it's spelled like cray. Because you're cray-cray.
Yeah, right.
Right, it's crawfish. Cray. Kevin, jump in. It's crawfish. It's
crawfish.
Not crayfish.
Crayfish. No, it's crawfish.
I've heard people say crayfish.
I have never.
Crawdaddy. Or like crawdad. Yeah.
You know who says crayfish? Is Bobby Skayfish.
Thank you, Daddy-O.
You're welcome.
Like it or not.
That's the only thing that rhymes with Skayfish, by the way.
Crayfish.
Congratulations. Do you have a word that rhymes with orange? Because that's the one everybody says there is no rhyme for.
No, I do not. I do not. all right. Now, this one
this is when Bill gets silly because he feels like he just cracked the whole world
up.
Yeah,
that's about it. All right. So this one, it says in the South, cut, the word cut, C-U-T, is used in place of the word turn in phrases like turn the volume down or turn the light off. Somebody would say cut the music down a bit. Now, that one I don't know to be true.
That.
I've never heard that.
It makes complete sense.
Yeah. Cut the lights.
Finally.
Cut the sound.
But I've never heard it, but, cut the sound down.
But it doesn't sound like a Southern thing to me.
No.
Does it? It just sounds more like...
More street, actually.
Yeah, it does.
Or cut it out. I guess, does that have anything to do with it?
It could. It doesn't say here, but yeah.
I will say this is a Southern term that my mother-in-law, Annette, uses that cracks me up. We would say lunch meat, like if you're getting a spread, you come over for sandwiches, we'll have a bunch of lunch meat on a plate or cold cuts. She's like, we're going to have some cold meat.
Oh, cold meat.
Cold meat.
Oh.
Which I guess
good.
That's what it is.
It is, but it doesn't sound
it
quite
doesn't
as
sound,
appetizing.
It doesn't.
No.
We going to grandma's? Yeah, what are we having? Cold meat?
It says here, and this, boy, is this true, in South, they don't do anything. They fix to do something.
Yeah, I'm fixing to, but I'm fixing to do this.
Yeah, I'm fixing to go to the store. Yeah. Just go to the store. Don't even fix it. Just go. It's right there. Like it or lump it. When you dress up here in the Midwest, if you've got a nice place to go, you dress up. You look your best. But in the South, what do? They gussy up.
Yeah.
I don't know who Gussie is. I'm guessing somebody's aunt.
That's almost a
verb. You Gussie. I'm all Gussie.
I think us saying Gussie up implies like not so nice.
Oh, is that right?
Well, I mean, Gussie is to me. No, that you're gussing up, but it's kind of an odd word. It's not a very pleasant word, I don't think.
That, again, my mom used to say, or my grandma, like if you were all dressed up for something, boy, you look good all gussied up.
Right. Right.
But it would be used as gussied up. I don't. I think that sounds better.
Instead but also of, in the
gussy,
South.
Gussy, which rhymes with hussy.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Right.
And tussy.
Right. Yes, it does. Also in the South, they will say, it doesn't say it on the list, but I've heard this, if you're getting dressed up on a certain day, it's your Sunday go-to-meeting outfit.
It's from the Blues Brothers.
Is that what it... No, but it preceded Blues Brothers. They use it in Blues Brothers, but the phrase was around before the Blues Brothers.
Isn't it in the song Rubber Biscuit?
Yeah, yeah.
Your Sunday go-to-meeting clothes?
Yeah.
John wants to jump into the conversation. John, thank you for calling us at 312-235-2525. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing all right. And the national food of the South is... Dr. Pepper and moon pies, but
yes, it is.
Having lived it for a long time, hey, I grew up on the West Coast, and I was going out to Texas for college. This is a long, long time ago, and I'm out. I'd never been to Texas before,
mm-hmm.
and I'm out in the sort of the hinterlands between the Midland, Odessa area and Dallas. Need to get some gas. I go up to the gas attendant, you know, in this little convenience store. Give her my credit card. She looks at me. She says. She says, where y'all from? I said, well, I'm from Oregon. And I tagged my Lawrence Medeiros. I thought I wasn't going to be able to pay for my gas. I had no cash on me, and I'm just a kid out there. She said,
yeah.
I thought y'all European because y'all got a European accent.
That's European. That's so funny.
And then, after I'd been in Dallas or Texas for a long, long time, I was talking to my sister because I mocked everybody there. I was just mocking the Southern accent like crazy. She goes, you're picking up a Southern accent.
You do it, though. We went down to Georgia one time for a summer vacation, and we met, there were some relatives down there, and they talk about ordering a Coca-Cola, and they just combined it. And you get home, and you're talking about a story, and you find yourself with a little hint of a twang there. And that's from making fun of them, I guess, John.
Yeah, it's making fun of me. I stopped saying fixin'. I stopped saying y'all. I stopped every Texas colloquialism there was. And I just, was very disciplined about it.
Now, John, the drink that you just mentioned at the beginning of the phone call, the Dr. Pepper, the way it's pronounced there, it takes a lot longer, but it's Dr. Pepper with an A-H at the end of each one.
Pepper. Yeah. Right.
They also have Aussie Cola. They take a long time to say that, too. A nice cold ice cola, icy cola.
You know, my time in the South, I was down there for 10 years.
I'm still hearing it. I'm still,
a lot.
John, I'm still hearing a little
just
bit
a trace.
Of,
yeah.
A little bit of Southern in you.
I might have it still, but I got to the point where I could almost discern the different accents from state to state. You know, Texas was unique, Louisiana a little different, Georgia, everywhere. In fact, today, if I hear someone with an accent, I can almost identify where they're from.
Identify. He's still got a little thing going there. Doesn't sound like Oregon to me, y'all.
I tell you.
John, thank you for calling. We appreciate it.
I love you guys. Bye.
Thanks, John. Now, when I was touring doing stand-up, if I was working in Georgia or Tennessee or someplace in that part of the South, once you'd purchase something in a store, they would say, the transaction would end with these words, come back. They would say that, and I didn't know... If that meant
what,
there was
I didn't
more,
give you enough money? Right. Why should I come back?
Well, what time exactly?
More to this transaction. Than, yeah, so that was frequent. A lot of people, and it's their way of saying, you know, when you're in the neighborhood, come on back. We'd love to have you, that kind of thing. But it's just those two quick words. Come back.
Y'all come back now. Right. You hear? What's that from?
Here
Beverly
I am.
Hillbillies?
The end of Beverly Hillbillies, yeah.
At least you understand that better. Y'all come back now. You hear?
Right, right. This is what I'm sure you've heard. If you're a smaller person... You're not just small or short. You are knee-high to a grasshopper.
That's not Southern.
I think that is Southern. You don't think it is? That sounds very
maybe.
Southern to me.
You're knee-high to a grasshopper.
That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
Knee-high to a grasshopper, meaning very, very small.
You only
very
come up
small.
To the grasshopper's knee.
That's the strangest saying.
You never heard that before?
No.
Never.
And you're from Shanahan.
Yeah, that's not the South.
That's South.
It's just south of I.
South of here.
Right. Right. This is what I've heard, but it's been a while. I don't know if this is fading out, but there's a verb usage. Again, it's kind of strange to us here in the Midwest, but somebody who's doing something, they'd say these words together, might, could. Did you ever hear that phrase?
Yeah.
It sounds a bit weird to those that these two words would be used back to back, but Southerners will pair them when saying that they may be willing to do something, as in, I might could go hunting this weekend. Meaning there's a chance they will go hunting.
Yeah, that sounds like they don't want to commit too much. Like,
right.
You know, I might maybe be able
to. Right.
I think, because my mother-in-law still sometimes uses that, it's like may be able to.
Yes.
Might could. That's their version of it.
It's almost like a contraction without an apostrophe. Yeah? Yeah. Also, people in the South will use this term, although it never really caught on in the rest of the country, and that term is reckon. They reckon to say or they reckon to do something.
Uncle Trent still says that.
Who says it, Jude?
The movies all the time.
Yeah, you hear it in
I reckon, yeah.
Jim's Uncle Trent.
He says reckon a lot.
I reckon.
And what is that an abbreviation of? It must be a shortened version of something.
You know what? That's a good question.
I don't know what that is. It says you'll occasionally hear this outside of the South, possibly in rural areas in the West, but it's nevertheless a decidedly Southern term. Mark Twain illustrated its usage by saying the Northern word guess, but it's a little, it is little used among Southerners. They're not guessing anything. I guess I'll do something. Instead of guess, they're reckoning that they'll do something.
The verb is established by counting or calculation, like to calculate.
Yeah.
Or to conclude after calculating, be of the opinion. So I guess you're right. I reckon.
Yeah. Yeah.
He still uses it. Believe is another synonym of it.
How would believe... Right.
Do you think...
How about I do declare? That's when the Foghorn Leghorn would pull out quite regularly. I do declare.
I say, I do declare.
But here in the Midwest, like if you were talking to somebody and you just threw that out there, you know what? I do declare that the weather is
today,
not...
Listeners.
Yeah, see what you get.
I always think it's like more of a girl thing. I do declare. You're a rascal.
But right, but you have to say it like you just said it. You have to build it up and
that
make it a show.
That was their OMG.
It was, wasn't
I do
it?
Declare.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That
like,
was there.
Exactly. Yeah. It could be for so many things.
Yeah.
So you know, now IDD instead of OMG.
Perfect. I have some relatives just right over the border in Indiana, and it's
a little different.
I mean, the same kind of reckon, the...
Sure.
The whooping.
Yeah, a whooping. That boy's asking for a whooping.
That's exactly. Definitely Southern.
Yeah.
I never got a whooping.
Yeah.
If you move to the South, you get one every day.
I got a wooden spoon instead of a whooping.
That was a whooping with a wooden spoon.
I guess.
Let me see if I can get one or two more of these in really quickly. Tails is one, but it's hard to... It says, until I wrote this article, this is according to Matt Sulem over at MSN, until I wrote this article, I never stopped to consider how often tails are mentioned in the South. For instance, if a Southerner wants to say that someone is really throwing a fit, they will say... He's pitching a hissy fit with a tail on it. Even more extreme, though, is a person who could be pitching a duck fit with a tail on it. So a hissy fit is bad. A duck fit is even worse. I don't know why. But
a hissy
fit
sounds worse.
And putting a tail on it is the
worst.
That
makes it even worse.
It's done. It's
yeah.
Can't be any worse.
Don't want your fits to have tails on them.
With a tail on it.
There are also tail phrases that warn someone to watch out, as in, I'm going to cut your tail, or I'm going to jerk a knot in your tail. Additionally, someone can be happier than a dog with two tails in the South.
That's a dog with something else when it's hot.
And
it's hotter than a dog with,
right,
you know.
I've seen dogs laugh when they hear that
phrase. I know,
phrase.
That's good.
I've seen
it's
a dog.
A canine joke.
I've heard a dog just nod its head and laugh when they hear that. Oh, wouldn't that be something
now,
they say?
Someone has texted us and said, reckon is an actual English word that goes back to the 13th century.
You know, it's weird because there's a play called The Reckoning, which means the realization. So there's something to that.
Bill Southern sounds more like a Kennedy.
Thank you.
I love Eastern Southern.
It's Southern Massachusetts.
I love hearing a bunch of Northerners try and fail to interpret Southern idioms.
What did they call us?
No, not idiot.
With a tail on
it? They might have been right. Yeah, definitely with a tail on it.
It's going to be perfect when I go back to the newsroom. I don't like that with a tail on.
I reckon that story needs to be told. All right, we must take a break.
Thanks, Judy.
I'm one of the Kennedys. Sure. We'll take a break, and then we'll close things off. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I reckon it's time we go for a Coca-Cola.
I'm fixing to have myself one or maybe two.
You don't sound like a Kennedy. You're doing a very good job. Although you sound like you should be in Deliverance.
Gomer Pyle.
Thank you. Well, thank you.
Gomer Pyle. Shazam!
I am getting my Southern accent from three of my favorite Southerners of all time, Wendy, and that would be the Hair Bear Bunch. That's where I'm getting my Southern accent from.
Do I have to wear a hat? Oh, you have
I am wearing a hat. Yep. I'm authentic. I'm a mood actor is what I am. All right. That's it. That's today's show. Do with it what you will. There's another one coming tomorrow, and it's the Friday show, and that's the... Uh-oh.
What are you doing, Kev?
Kevin's making the music go up and down.
He's cutting the sound.
He sure is.
Are you doing that?
I like it. My hand was on the slider. I had a little twitch, and it went up.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, sorry it ended on that. I think that ruined the whole show.
It did.
The whole show was great, and now it's ruined.
Thanks, Kevin. Bless his heart.
Bless his heart. The worst producer ever. Bless his heart.
We're kidding.
Bye, everybody. Bye, Wendy.
See you, Bill.